Good morning. Good to have our visitors here. I think I may have timed out, but it looks like it's coming back on. If you were here last week, I'm sure that you probably remember that Isaac spoke on the topic of what? Marriage. That's right. Today, I'm going to bring the sequel sermon and talk about parenting, which for many is oftentimes the next step in life. Who knows what July the 3rd is? Sheila?
Your anniversary and Avery's birthday?
Close.
Finley's
birthday. That's right. So what that means is we've been parenting for a decade because Finley's turning 10. And as I was thinking about that, that seemed like a long time. Probably not to some of you who have grown children. But for me, when I thought about that, a decade of raising kids, learned a lot. Learned a lot of things as a dad, but one big immovable truth of being a parent stands out above all others. A passage I know everybody here is familiar with from Psalms 127. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has a quiver full of them. There's other Old Testament passages that I'm sure you can probably quote too. Here's one that I think probably everybody knows. I'll get you started, see if you know the rest of it. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. That passage there reveals three really important truths that we as parents don't always get right. In fact, if I were to translate this verse the way that I have sometimes parented, it might read a little bit more like this. Tell a child the way he shouldn't go, so today he will obey. That sounds familiar to you. I've got good news. There is a better way. There are similar passages in the Bible that support these principles, but I really like this simple, concise, what I say at work a lot of times, be brief but brilliant, summary here in Proverbs 22 and 6. Let's talk about all three of those. And keep in mind, when we talk about telling, we still have to tell our children what to do. We still have to tell them where they shouldn't go. And we do still have to, at times, tell them things for the immediate present. But let's look at those three in a different context this morning. I've got them broken down. Train versus telling. The first parenting shift is to understand our role as trainers and not merely tellers. How many of you heard this growing up? How many times do I have to tell you to fill in the blank? Make your bed, brush your teeth, get ready for school, clean, you know, the list goes on. How about this one? I think I might have said it this morning too. Don't make me tell you again. This is the easiest form of parenting because it requires the least amount of effort. And the goal of parenting isn't to find the quickest or the easiest way or the path of least resistance as we bring our children up into adulthood. As James mentioned this morning, some kids are more naturally pleasers, and one verbal instruction is all they need. Others, and I think they know who they are, need some extra motivation. It may be that a child's disobedience is a result of reactionary parenting and could be remedied by shifting from parent tellers to parent trainers. Here's the deal. It will require more time. It will require more thoughtfulness and patience to do it that way. But according to Proverbs, it's the way to go. As Christian parents, this training mindset may feel a bit new or rusty, but the model has been firmly established through the life and the ministry of Jesus himself. Consider, for instance, how Jesus taught his disciples to pray. He didn't merely say, James and John, go pray. He said, let me model a prayer life for you and show you what that looks like. In Mark chapter 1, verse 35 says this, now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed. Dads, how often have you left early while everybody's still asleep to go somewhere to be in a quiet spot and prayed? And your children see that. Luke chapter 5, verse 16. So he himself often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. It's not a one-time thing. It's a pattern of behavior that children see in their parents that they will model themselves. So Jesus modeled how to pray. He also taught us the why. This was a big one for me. It always has been. I want to understand why you're telling me to do this. Sometimes you just need to do it because I told you to. Other times it's important for kids to understand the why. Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 11, Jesus gave the why. It's important to pray. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened. Why? Because to everyone who asks, receives. And he who seeks, finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. But what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask? So Jesus said, I want to tell you why you need to pray. Because God will give you the things that you ask for. And he showed it to him in practice, in his life. In Luke chapter 11, verses 2 through 4, he says, when you pray, say, Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, as we also forgive everyone who's indebted to us. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Then finally, he encouraged them in their prayer life and encouraged them to keep going. In Luke 18, then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. Imagine the impact in our homes as we move from a culture of parent tellers to parent trainers, teachers. Point number two, back to Proverbs. Should versus shouldn't. Train a child in the way he should go. It's not a surprise that one of the very first words a toddler learns to say is no. No. Sadly, many of our homes, not necessarily in the church, but in the world, are dominated with parents repeatedly telling their children what not to do. Unfortunately, according to Paul, merely arming our kids with this impressive collection of do nots will not adequately prepare them fully for what lies ahead. There's more that's needed. We've been studying in the book of Colossians. We've wrapped it up, but if you'll recall from chapter 2, verse 21 and 23, therefore, if you died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourself to regulations? Do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which all things concern those that perish with the using, according to the commandments and doctrines of men. These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, and neglect of the body, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. The principle of training a child in the way they should go is more than just semantics. It's a way of parenting that reflects the very heart of our Heavenly Father. It's seen in its nature all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Contrary to popular opinion and memory, God's first words in the garden were not, "Do not eat of that tree." What were his first words? "Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat." Before God gave the vital no, he had a far bigger yes. God makes clear the way we should go so that when he does say no, and he will, and we as parents need to do that as well, we can be confident that that no is to preserve us for life and not prevent us from it. This point was brought up by James this morning, and it was a good one. It is important that we teach our kids about authority, that they have been born into a world of authority or submission, and that the earlier they submit, the more blessed their life will be. Here's the turning point that we need to get our kids to come to. And that is, they come to the point where they realize ultimately that they don't belong to mom and dad, but they belong to the Lord. He created them. He loves them more than mom and dad do. He died for them, and he is their supreme authority. And the sooner that they realize that mom and dad are merely the tone of his voice and the look on his face or the touch of his hand, the better off they will be. Think about it this way. Every time we, as a parent or a member of the church, if need be, exercise authority in the lives of our children, and all of those little mundane things and all of those life circumstances, when we exercise authority, it must be a picture or a reflection of the authority of God. I want my kids to see authority as good, loving, patient, gracious, because that is what the authority of God looks like. Kids are born with a natural resistance toward authority, and it's our responsibility as parents and members of the church to depict authority in its purest, most divine form so that they will be coming to appreciate it as good, wise, protective, freedom-giving, and not freedom-crushing. Here's another important truth for moms and dads out there. If your eye sees or your ear hears about the sin or the weakness or the failure of your children, know that is not an accident, an interruption, or a hassle. It is an opportunity from God. It's a grace from God because he loves them. And he put them in a family of faith, and I believe that he will reveal their needs to us, their weaknesses to us, their sins to us as parents, so that we can be his tool or his instrument to exercise authority on his behalf and train them in the way that they should go. That's how the system should work. And I'm thankful he gives us plenty of opportunities, plenty of grace as parents to get that right. Number three, train, not tell. Give them the should, not always the shouldn't. But also be thinking about the long term, not just the short term. Train a child in the way that he is should go so that when he is old, he will not depart from it. I think it's good for us to as parents to focus on the long range by imagining our children as adults. And for some of you, that's not hard to do. I think when we do that, it can help us guard against making short-term decisions and trying to win today's battle at the expense of losing the war. The long game may last for decades, but it begins while our children are young, and we cannot wait till they leave the house to create a home they would want to return to. Playing the long game will influence what we want our kids to hear the most and what we want our kids to also hear the least. The quick response of, "We don't do that in this house," may save a few minutes in the short term, but can rob parenting in the long run. Kids who are only told how to think will lose interest and wither like a plant with shallow roots. As Christian parents, we have the privilege of teaching our kids what's right, but that doesn't mean we should do it like a fool, described in Proverbs 18, who takes no delight in understanding but expressing his own heart or opinion. When one of our kids ignores the request to clean their room or to get along with their siblings or to take out the trash, consider the long game. Instead of getting frustrated and raising your voice and repeating the same command in a louder one, consider a thoughtful, provoking question or a conversation, or maybe giving them an example from the Bible about what happens whenever we don't follow or obey. Those are the three things from Proverbs 22. The last few minutes, we're going to look at Psalms 78. And I want to read verses 1 through 7 because I think that these verses have some really great instructions for us as parents, as well as members of the church who have responsibilities as well as guardians. Like our children are wards of the church. We're entrusted to care for them. So there's good instructions here. I've got six that I'll bring to you briefly that I think we all need to be putting into practice when it comes to spiritual guardianship of our children. It says, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children. Tell to the generation to come the praises of the Lord, and his strength, and his wonderful works that he has done. For he has established a testimony in Jacob, and appointed a law in Israel, which he has commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would to be born, that they might arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments." Six very brief things that I've got up on the board here. Short learning objectives for parents and members of the church. Number one, God first. Verse 4, the second half of it. Telling the generation to come the praises of the Lord and of his strength and of his wonderful works that he has done. All Christian parenting and education should begin with God. He is the first, the last, the ultimate unchanging reality. And everything else that we teach our kids should come after that. This verse specifically tells us that our instruction should focus on praising him, speaking of his strength, and of his wonderful works. If you don't feel fully qualified to teach your children on a complex doctrine of the Trinity or some other matter, the church will help with that. But surely you can teach him about his strength, his wonderful works. If there's one memory our kids should have of our families and of the church, it should be that we put God first. If God is not our first priority, he probably will not be for your children either. Number two, his word is truth. In verse 5, "For he has established a testimony and appointed a law in Israel." The Hebrew word translated there as law really means to teach. So I'm going to paraphrase it in my own words here. It says, "God has testified and God has taught." Today we have both his testimony and his teaching right here in one book, the Bible. It is the way that God reveals himself to us with clarity and with authority. And the implications for that as a parent are monumental. It means that the Bible should be the sun of our solar system, and that all we teach our children and all other books that may be presented to them will be read in the light of this book and judged by this book. This book must be known first and better than any other book out there. Number three, teach them. The back half of verse 5. When he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children. We are commanded to teach the testimony of God to our children. It is not enough just to tell our kids, go read your Bible. That's necessary, but there's more to it. We have to teach them what it means. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, and you fathers do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. It was read this morning. Here's a truth that cannot be ignored. Since the testimony of God is in a book, this means that we must teach our kids to read. In fact, among reading, writing, and arithmetic, reading will be of the most supreme importance in their life. You can make it by if you don't know algebra or trigonometry, but you must learn how to read. And reading is no simple thing. Not only do we need to know letters at a young age and words as we get older, we also have to understand and recognize that there are ideas attached to the words. Learning how to read never stops, and there is always room for improvement. I believe the main incentive for all of us to be very good readers is that the infinitely glorious God of the universe, who made all things and made you, and who loves you beyond measure, chose to testify and teach you through the words of a book, principally. A lot of other ways, but most of it's right here. Number four, learn to know. Or as they say in Louisiana, you got to learn them. Verse 6, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children. You might think that this point is the same one as before, as I was talking about teaching, but teaching and learning are two different things. I sat through two semesters in college of professors teaching the principles of chemistry, but I don't think I learned anything. I put facts in short-term memory for the purpose of passing a test. True knowledge is a precious thing, and the kind of knowledge that God has planned for our kids is more than an awareness of his existence or committing a few verses to memory. Our aim as parents is to teach our children in a way that they commit it to wisdom and their salvation. Number five, kids put their hope and your confidence in God. Verse 7 says, that they may set their hope or their confidence, in other versions, in God. God has testified, he has taught, that we might have a written, reliable truth for teaching our kids to know him, not just learn of him, but to know him. For what purpose? Or to what end? Well, that they may put their confidence in him. The aim of all true education is to deepen and broaden a child's confidence in who God is for their life. And this is what also helps to keep learning from turning into pride. All true learning and all true knowledge reveals to us that we are dependent on God. Number six, and the last, it's the responsibility of parents and of the church to help them understand a life of obedience. Verse 7, and not to forget the works of God, but to keep his commandments. When our children are confident in God, they are more likely to follow his commandments. The reason outward obedience to God is the final goal of parenting is because it externalizes the glory of God. Internal states of mind, no matter how good, do not manifest or reveal the worth of God. But when we, as parents, members of the church, whenever we and our children are so confident in God and His glory that we gladly obey Him, then that glory is going to shine forth in the world. And that's the real reason that we were created, according to Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14, that says, "For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." I'd like to close with one final implication on parenting. Parents, we have an unbelievable opportunity and responsibility in raising our children. But God intends for parenting to also happen in the church, which is designed to provide and support both for the parents as they learn how to be parents and to provide that structure for children as well. So, coming off the heels of VBS, to all those who prepared, taught, supported VBS, as a parent, thank you. Thank you for taking the time with my children and for the others of the congregation in investing in their life and helping to point them to salvation. The message this morning was really about parenting, didn't necessarily lend itself to an invitation, but we're going to take this opportunity to encourage you. Maybe we have young children out there today, and I think we do, who know that they need to be baptized. Their parents have told them, trained them, shown them, and encouraged them about the importance of baptism and how it brings you into the family of God, opens the doors of salvation. If you're one of those children this morning and you want to take that step, now would be a good time. Or if you're an adult and you need to turn back as well, you have that opportunity as we stand and sing an invitation song.